listening to The Finalysis with Travis Wingfield and Kevin Dern. Brought to you by WelcomeToPerfectville.com. Prepare to go deep.
What's up, Dolphins, and welcome back to another edition of the Finalysis podcast. I am your host, as always, Travis Wingfield, along with Kevin Dern here. And that was a little playoff flashback, Kevin, from the 2000 season when Lamar Smith went for 206 yards to beat the Colts in overtime, the last time the Dolphins won a playoff game. I'm not going to try to harp on the Steelers' loss too much rather than bask in the glory here of former Dolphins allure. So, Kevin, how's your day going today, man?
It's been busy. I had the last 2 weeks off work and back to the grind, and I had a lot of people congratulate me on the Dolphins season the last 2 days, but too bad about this past Sunday.
Yeah, it sucked. It wasn't a lot of fun. I mean, from the jump with Antonio Brown basically just doing what he does and taking us to the shed, you know, I was bummed out about it as the game was going on. I had my high hopes, you know, when they had the chances to make the comebacks, but, you know, this season, you and I talked about it plenty of times in the podcast before, how this was more of a house money type of thing where we're just, we're kind of not lucky to be there because I definitely earned the 10 victories in the playoff berth, but it just seemed like the whole time the house of cards was going to fall at any moment, and it did finally, you know, at the hands of a very good offense and a very good team in Pittsburgh. So that playoff run that I just played there on the air for you guys was, like I said, the Lamar Miller touchdown run against the Colts. Probably one of my top two or three favorite Dolphins games ever. And, you know, being a 29-year-old Dolphins fan, we don't have much of that. I know, Kevin, you liked the Denver game from 2002, but is there any other games that you can think of off the top of your head right now that would compare to that game?
Probably the most memorable one for me is in the 94 season, the season opener, when Miami played New England. That was Marino's first game back from his Achilles injury, and he and Drew Bledsoe had that shootout, and Miami had the 4th and 6 play, and Marino just said, fuck it, and threw a touchdown. I think it was like 35 yards to Irving Fryer to win the game.
That's very Adam Gaze to Kenny Stills type of play call there. I love that parallel there. That was a good game.
He was on the cover of Sports Illustrated the week after, and I think I had that cover hanging on my wall for like 2 or 3 years.
So. That's awesome. I think you probably have a little bit better memory of that than I do. I actually had that game on VHS tape. When I was on the Fin Heaven back in the day, there was this old-time fan. I can't remember his name or his screen name or anything, but he used to always tell me, like, he said, anytime you want a game on DVD or VHS, I guess it was VHS back then, you just tell me and I'll send it off to you because I love, you know, educating the younger fans about the older games. So I have all these, like I have the perfect season Super Bowl on DVD somewhere. I have that game tape. I have the 2002 Denver game that you and I talked about earlier. So I have that one and much, much more back in a garage somewhere.
Yeah, that's cool, man. I'd love to see some of those. And like you were saying earlier, like I'm pretty excited with how the season ended, even though we had the loss. I mean, if you think about it, even if we had beaten Pittsburgh, I don't think there's any way Miami was going to go into New England.
No.
And beat him on Saturday on a short week. So, you know, I guess I'm glad we had the mercy killing rather than just getting totally blown out by the Patriots again.
I kept on saying that I wanted to see them go to New England just to have the opportunity. But the more I think about it, Houston's going to be the one that has to take that embarrassing defeat. So, you know, a playoff win would have been nice. But like that's, you know, like you were saying, that's what we're talking about here is that it was a great season regardless of how it ended. And that's how I felt going into it. I said that on Twitter. I told everyone in person that I had talked to you about the game. And that's kind of why Kevin and I wanted to have more of a positive, upbeat vibe this episode rather than being, you know, down in the dumps. I mean, I told Kevin before the show, I'm probably more excited to record this one than I have been in quite a while because, you know, this year, as much fun as it was, and Kevin, I think it was the most fun I've ever had as a Dolphins fan, even better than the 2008 season and the reason for that is because of the sustainability factor there with this team and this roster and this coach. And, you know, I look at some of the draft, you know, eligible players on defense. I look at some of the free agent options we have. And Kevin and I will get into that much, much more in a future episode. But I just think the sky's the limit for this team and this roster with how young they are. So as I was watching that game, I was thinking to myself, just the fact that we're here. And, I mean, let's not call it competing because they lost by 18 points. And they never really looked like they were in the game except for maybe at the end of the first half there. But hanging with the Steelers, at least trying to, like, you know, they didn't look completely overmatched, I guess is the word I'm trying to say, except for on defense. And the reason they did was because I mean, how many injuries can you possibly sustain? How many teams can take their three best defensive backs out of the lineup and expect them to play well?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, you're right. I do kind of wonder what would have happened if Matt Moore hadn't fumbled at the end of the first half there. I guess we'll never know. But, you know, you're absolutely right. Like, to me, this is the most excited I've been about the Dolphins at the end of a season, probably since after that 05 year, Nick Saban's first year, when they won those last six games. And, you know, I think it's just, you know, they were playing with house money, basically, because they had so many injuries. They had so many guys step up. And usually, like, for me, I don't know about you, Trav, but, like, after the season, I usually have to take, like, a week away and just kind of let it sink in. You know, the last couple of years, we've always talked about, well, how's Jeff Ireland going to blow our free agent money? You know, why are we keeping Joe Philbin again after Bullygate and the playoff collapse? Like, we don't have that this year, and it's so nice to be able to be excited again.
It is. That's the biggest thing for me, too, is, you know, I posted something on the Welcome to Perfect Field, Right Travis, Right blog portion of the site that I found on the message board, I think from the Finns. I think it was last September, like late last September. It was right after the Bills defeat. In week three, when we just got trounced by Tyrod Taylor and we were 1-2 going into the London game, right before Philbin got fired. And I had this lengthy, basically complaining, bitchy post talking about how being a 28-year-old Dolphins fan at the time, 29 now, but being a 28-year-old Dolphins fan, I mean, what kind of success have I ever seen? You know, the furthest I can really recall this team going is to the wild card round. I know I was, you know, I watched some divisional games, but I was a kid, man. Like, you know, like, what the general rules are, but you don't, I mean, you and I, the way, how close we follow this game, it's just a lot different now. You know, I'm so much more connected as an older, more mature fan. So I haven't really seen this team progress much past that. I think that the future has a lot of that in it with this squad, because like you said, you mentioned the 05 team. We got excited about, I think if we had Drew Brees, we'd have had more legitimate excitement there, but you know, Dante Culpepper really put a sour feeling on that season. So just knowing that we're good at the quarterback position, the offense has skill players that, I mean, for my money, I don't know about you, but, you know, with Ajayi, Stills, Parker, and Landry, I think you're hard-pressed to find a better, you know, foursome. I mean, there's probably a few out there, but maybe not more than five teams that have a better foursome at the skill players. Would you say there's more than that out there?
Yeah, and I think I mentioned it in the last episode or maybe two ago. Like, it's so nice to actually have confidence in at least one side of the ball.
Right.
Like, the offense, if you bring back Stills, you know, really what's the only thing you got to do is tweak the O-line, right? And I think what's so clear is this year, you know, we know the weakness is the front seven on defense, but you can actually devote extra resources to that because you've built up that other side of the ball. And to me, that's exciting, because in years past, we've never really known which direction Jeff Ireland would go. You know, Dennis Hickey couldn't work an iPhone to save his life.
Exactly.
And then Tannenbaum, you know, we basically maxed out our free agent money the 1 year we signed Sue right off the bat.
Yeah.
So it's really exciting to me to know that. I think if you tweak it, and, you know, someone brought this up on the Fins too, but it might have even been you, Travis. I can't remember who posted it. But, you know, I think one of the benefits we'll have is maybe Ryan Tannehill not playing and not coming back the last couple games would be a blessing in disguise. Maybe him getting a chance to see how Matt Moore kind of ran the offense and kind of had a more expanded menu of plays. Maybe Ryan Tannehill will kind of see, like, okay, you know, even though I don't like to run A, B, and C, but now seeing Matt Moore do it, I know if I run A, B, and C, it's going to set me up for this big play, you know, the next drive or the next quarter or whatever it may be. So I think we might even get an added boost from him just from that experience of not being on the field the last, what, three or four games. So I'm really excited about the offensive side of the ball as we head into the off season.
Yeah, so am I. And a couple of points that I wanted to touch on that you mentioned there, some really good points there too, Kev. The first thing was you talked about kind of how, you know, we have this offense in place and we have the key spots on defense that we need to focus on. But I think I sent you this text earlier today that I kick this idea around sometimes because, you know, a lot of times you get into the draft and Mel Kiper has all the team needs up there and what exactly teams are going to target. But then you get a player that falls to you that is just a hell of a player and you take him. And that's been my favorite strategy over the years. But also just thinking, I mean, what have the Seahawks always done, you know, over the last couple of years? If they have a player they like, they draft him regardless of position, because if they can strengthen a unit, that just makes their team better. So I'm thinking, like, maybe our defense can't be fixed immediately, but you know what could happen to the offense is that they could become, you know, go from a top 15, 16 unit in terms of efficiency, not volume, obviously, but go from that to like, you know, top five, to where they're just dominant and they're doing, you know, Matt Ryan things to teams and putting 31 points on the scoreboard every game. And that's really hard for, even if you have a bad defense, to lose that kind of a lead, and you can really unleash that pass rush and then get the takeaways. So that's kind of one thing I'm curious about. And I'll ask your thoughts here on that in a minute. But also, you know, what I'm excited about is just, like you said, seeing Ryan Tannehill back out there in for Matt Moore. That wasn't my idea on the Finns. I appreciate you trying to give me credit for it, but I did read it and I love the point because, you know, for all we've heard about Ryan Tannehill and the way he studies with Adam Gase and the way they're kind of joined at the hip, and they almost have that Sean Payton, Drew Brees relationship that most teams fans envy. I kind of think there's something there like that with Ryan Tannehill and Adam Gase. But then you have Matt Moore, the kind of wily veteran that comes in and kind of mixes it up, and he's really loose and he's laid back. And I think that giving Tannehill's studious nature, that he will definitely take something away from what Matt Moore was able to do in this offense and kind of open things up. And as you mentioned, those shot plays, because that's what Adam Gase loves to do. He loves to be consistent ahead of the sticks and then built in shot plays on third and short, or, you know, whatever the situation is. So I think those are great points. But what do you think about my first idea with the offense being, you know, I get we have to fill holes. It has to happen at linebacker and D end. But what about if you have, you know, an O.J. Howard there, and then you can sign someone like a, you know, Larry Warford, and just build a dominant offense that is Dallas Cowboys-esque?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be against it at all. And I think Larry Warford would probably be one of my prime targets in free agency, you know, regardless of what strategy you took. You know, and we saw it happen last year. You know, I don't think anyone expected Laremy Tunsil to fall to 13. And, you know, we took him, and I think we're much better off for it rather than, you know, trying to force a Miles Jack or a Sheldon Rankins or, you know, one of those corners we had talked about last year. So I could definitely see that. And then the other thing, too, I think may help is, you know, all through training camp and even really the first four or five games of this past year, we never really had that rhythm on offense. Adam Gase was kind of like, you know, we'll see what works, whether we're a gap scheme or a zone blocking scheme in terms of running the ball. We never really had that bell cow. You know, Arian Foster kind of was that guy for the first game, and that was about it. And then we kind of had that rotation with Drake and Isaiah Pede and Jai and Williams. You know, what's it going to be like this training camp when we actually know, okay, we're an outside zone running team.
Yeah.
What can we do to build off that? You know, we know Ryan Tannehill's strengths. We know we can take shot plays. Now that we've got that stuff kind of built in and we're really good at that, what can we do to expand off of it? So even if we don't end up, you know, getting a weapon like an O.J. Howard, or I'm going to butcher this name. We were talking about this before we started, that Njoku, the tight end from Miami.
Better you than me, man.
Yeah, I'll fall on the sword with that one. But, you know, even if we don't get one of those guys to fall to us, you know, first round, second round, whatever it may be, I think Miami's offense will be, you know, better from the start of the season just
right,
because they've had success and they know what works this time around rather than everything being, you know, a relative unknown. So, but yeah, if someone like that fell, you know, I wouldn't be opposed to taking them in the draft at all.
Absolutely. And you go back to the, you know, talking about Ryan Tannehill again and kind of how the offense took several weeks to catch its, you know, to get its sea legs under it, if you will. And Ryan Tannehill goes for over 100 passer rating during the win streak that he posted, and, you know, even during that Arizona game and the Baltimore game after the win streak had ended. And, you know, you get him over 100, and you have guys like, you know, Matt Ryan having career years, record-setting type of years, and Tom Brady doing what he did this year. Other than that, though, I mean, Tannehill was pretty much right up below the next level of guys in terms of how well he played during that stretch there, with a strong running game, like you mentioned, and having all these pieces in place where we know what kind of offense we're going to be. I think a play-action offense using Ryan Tannehill's arm talent as well as his scramble ability is definitely going to be built into that a lot more next year. And hopefully some of the hurry-up gets added back in that was, you know, there early in the season. I think there's a lot of positive direction for this offense that can go in, especially if you retain Kenny Stills and have that receiving core together. So 100% with you there. We mentioned O.J. Howard a little bit, and Kevin, you mentioned I'm going to have to do the heavy lifting here because I wanted to talk about last night's college national championship game, because I think if you're a fan of football, you had a blast watching that game, especially if you're a fan of the Dolphins, seeing Nick Saban lose on the final second of the game. The crying Jordan memes for me is about as good as it gets, and they had so many of them on Twitter and Facebook that I saw just cracking me up all night, and I was really excited about that. But you know, you watch that game, Kevin, and you can elaborate on this too, because I know you've watched plenty of Clemson and Alabama both this year, but the amount of NFL talent on that field last night, and you know, we're going to be pretty heavy into the draft the next couple of months, guys, so I hope you're prepared for that. But the amount of talent on that field last night was ridiculous. I mean, I tweeted out, I think at one point I realized that there's five linebackers in that game that could probably start for the Dolphins next year. You have Rashawn Evans, Alabama, Tim Williams, Ryan Anderson. He's a fringe outside linebacker slash DN, but I'd say more of an outside backer. And then obviously Reuben Foster's, for me, I would take him in the top five. I think he's that good. And then Ben Bulwer is probably more of a middle of the draft type of guy. He has some tackling issues, but really, really a smart cerebral player, easy for me to say. So what do you make of those linebackers? Do you think that one of those guys could possibly be a Dolphin next year?
Yeah, I would think so. And, you know, if Reuben Foster somehow slipped or Miami traded up, you know, he'd be my number one guy. But, you know, I think for us, you know, any of those guys would be welcome additions. And, you know, Ryan Anderson, I think, would fill a big need for Miami. Bulwer, I actually didn't get a chance to see the game last night. I saw one drive. We had our end-of-the-year company party. I saw the touchdown where Clemson made it 17-14, and then I fell asleep. So I'm going to have to go back and rewatch it. But from what everyone was talking about today on Twitter and on the Fins, it sounded like Ben Bulwer had a pretty nice game as well.
Yeah, he did. I know CK, Chris Kaufman on the Fins, as well as Twitter at CK Parrot, had mentioned that he had several missed tackles of Bo Scarborough. And one of the notes he made was that Ben Bulwer looked like a small child trying to tackle a horse. I thought that was pretty accurate and pretty funny. Yeah. So he does have some physical limitations, but he's a good player overall. We'll get more into the draft, you know, later on, but just want to talk about that game a little bit. And Mike Williams going off, and I forget his first name, the little slot receiver for Clemson, Renfrow. I think Hunter Renfrow is his name, had the game-winning touchdown, and he was just awesome all game, catching third down balls and extending the drives and stuff. Pretty good performance from that Clemson defense. Thought Cordrea Tankersley had a pretty good game on the outside, guarding Calvin Ridley for most of the game. So a lot of talent, just a blast of a game. Your boy had a decent amount of Benjamins on the game at Clemson +6.5, so that was fun for me too. And then, you know, something I forgot in the intro, Kevin, was, you know, you and I were talking about how unusually excited we are after a playoff loss, which is so weird. But another reason I'm excited about it is because I just had the weekend from hell at work. I get on call work during the weekends once a month, and my phone just blew up all night, like at 2 o'clock in the morning, getting calls telling me I have to go to a hospital and inspect the water damage and get a crew on it right away. So that was just a nightmare for me, and my horrible dentist trip. And then, you know, the Dolphins game was almost like a sanctuary, even though we got our asses beat. But just thinking about this team's future and, you know, Chris Greer and Adam Gase and Mike Tannenbaum, what they can do moving forward, man, I could not be more excited about the future.
Yeah, I agree. And going back to what we talked about, what you were saying with Tannehill, I saw Joe Shad from the Palm Beach Post had an article today, and I was kind of surprised at these numbers, but Tannehill actually finished 12th in the NFL in passer rating, and he was 8th in the NFL in yards per attempt. So, you know, I think that speaks pretty well to that shot play offense, and, you know, hopefully we can get Kenny Stills back. But, you know, like we said, that's for another episode.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm really excited to watch that Bama-Clemson game. I recorded it, and I think that's probably what I'll be doing Thursday night, because my girlfriend is going to be at work. So, Captain Lou, I'll miss you, but I'll be busy.
That's a cute nickname there. I like that. But, hey, text me when you're watching that game and tell me some of your thoughts, because I'm curious to hear what you think about it too, because I was really in analyst mode last night watching that game myself. So curious to hear your thoughts and hear some of the stuff. So a little quick drop right here for some of our future stuff to come down the pipe. The reason we're talking about this college game so much is because Kevin and I have quite a bit of plans for the draft for Welcome to Perfectville. And, you know, you can check out our entire catalog at welcometoperfectville.com. The Welcome to Perfectville podcast with Sam and Chris. Don't forget to check out those guys. Obviously, the Finalysis podcast, me and Kevin here. And then Write Travis Write is my blog portion. And then Ronan's Rumblings is Kevin's blog portion of that as well. I'm thinking we're going to have a pretty big, let's just call it a catalog for the draft. I might even have Sam add a separate tab and just kind of add players that I'm hearing more and more things about. I mean, Kevin and I have these resources on thefins.com and through Twitter that way too, of these guys that are just so plugged in. We're not going to share anything that they wouldn't want us to, but if it becomes public on Twitter, like for instance, CK today mentioned that Ryan Anderson had 540, or I think it was an ESPN interview, he had 540 possible practices at Alabama and didn't miss a single one of them. Just tidbits like that, that, you know, we can share with you guys. So I'm gonna put together profiles of these guys. I just got myself set up here. I'm gonna call it my draft laboratory. I got a 22-inch monitor hooked up to my laptop that I'm gonna be able to study tape on and then take notes on my laptop. So I'm ready to go for that. I've got several player profiles done already, getting close to 100 now, Kevin, if you can believe it. Been pretty plugged in this year. So we have tons of draft stuff to bring you guys. I'm gonna go ahead and post, like, you know, who we're meeting with, some draft breakdown videos from YouTube and that kind of stuff too. So if you guys want to know what's going to happen with the Dolphins in the draft, Welcome to Perfectville is your best source, because I'm going to be on it like white on rice, for lack of a better term. So that's what we have coming for you guys, and plenty, plenty more. But as for now, Kevin, do you want to kick off the season awards that you and I had discussed?
Sure. I guess real quick, I told everyone last week on the podcast, my second article for Welcome to Perfectville would be coming out. Hopefully we'll have that published tomorrow or Thursday. That's a little tidbit on our defensive coordinator, Vance Joseph, and what happens if he leaves. And then to kind of build into Travis's draft catalog, what we could be looking for, at least defensively, this offseason, free agency and the draft.
So, oh, okay, cool. I didn't know you were coming out with that tomorrow. Cool, good news.
Yeah, so tomorrow or Thursday, that'll be up. But yeah, so one of the things Travis and I wanted to do, and we may end up doing sort of a combined venture with Perfectville, Sam and Chris, later on, is we wanted to do some end-of-season awards. We thought that would only be right to kind of end the year on a high note. So we have five of them. I'm just going to list off the awards, and then we'll kick it to Travis for the first one. So we have Team MVP, Offensive Player of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, Best Newcomer, that could be the best draft pick or free agent signing that we had. And then we also have the Dallas Thomas Memorial Player of the Year Award for the Dolphin who had the worst season. So with that, I think we might as well just work to the bottom up and keep with the positive mindset. So Travis, give me your Dallas Thomas Memorial Player of the Year.
Totally ripping off Sam and Chris's segment here, which we cannot top, but it definitely is fitting to have Dallas Thomas's name attached to the worst player of the year. And for me, Kevin, I think you might get on me here for injuries or whatever it is, but I'm going to go with Jelani Jenkins. I was pretty hard on him all year. He just over-pursued when he got to the edges. He was in the wrong gap half the time. His coverage was – he was always a step and a half late in coverage on tight ends and stuff over the middle of the field. So my worst player, my Dallas Thomas worst player for this episode is Jelani Jenkins for the 2016 season.
Yeah, and you'll be surprised. I actually have two. I couldn't separate the two, but Jelani Jenkins is one of them. I agree. He just was not himself, and he's a pretty far cry from the player that we saw in early 2014 who looked like he was going to be something special. But yeah, Jelani Jenkins. And then the other one I went with was Mario Williams. Just totally packed it in the last, you know, half of the season. Claims he's being hurt. You know, I think he played five total snaps against Pittsburgh on Sunday. Just never really amounted to anything, and he had a ton of experience in the wide nine, including a career year. So Jelani Jenkins and Mario Williams get the Dallas Thomas Player of the Year award from me.
Well, it's actually not fair, because I didn't even consider Mario Williams, because I pretty much forgot about him. So yeah, that's a good vote for that. I agree with you there. And then the next one, Kevin, I'm going to let you lead this one off too for Best Newcomer of the Year.
Okay. So Best Newcomer, we didn't really do a whole lot in free agency, and I was tempted to go with Andre Branch, but I'm going to kind of go with the easy lob pick and go with Laremy Tunsil. You know, it's pretty rare you get kind of at least arguably the best player in the draft class to fall to you outside of the top 10, and we got him. I think I saw a stat at one point he had like 600-some pass reps, and still hadn't allowed a sack yet this season. I don't remember him ever giving up a sack this year. And this was playing out of position for him. Right. I think he's going to be an outstanding left tackle when he gets there. But for me, I'll give it to Big Tunsil.
I hope that he goes left tackle immediately starting a training camp next year. But that's for another episode down the road. We're going to talk about some free agent moves and that kind of stuff. So my best newcomer, and that, you know, Tunsil probably was the pick there, but I wanted to go a different direction. And I'm actually going to take one of your defenders off the defensive side of the ball, was Issa Abdul-Kaddous back in the secondary, man. We, you know, Rashad Jones went down, and we've had problems at safety for years, it seems like, or at least filling the hole next to Rashad Jones. And from that first game in Seattle, you know, Kaddous had the interception of Russell Wilson and just played really well down the field and was a very good center fielder for us and negated some big, you know, stopped some of those big plays. I think that if he's on the field on Sunday, Antonio Brown doesn't just have a party in Pittsburgh there. So Issa Abdul-Kaddous, I thought, was a fantastic acquisition, and we really, really missed him when we had to put in Michael Thomas and Bakari Rambo to fill in for him.
I really like that pick. I kind of wish I'd thought of him.
I wanted your Tunsil pick, so maybe we'll just pretend like we swapped those out.
Yeah.
Okay, so Defensive Player of the Year is the next one?
Yep.
Okay, I'll take this one first. I might take your guy here, but let me know if I do or don't. But I'm going to go with the old-timer, Mr. Torn Achilles himself, 34 years old, 11.5 sacks, Cameron Wake, because in games where he had a sack, we were 10-0. So that's a pretty you know, impressive stat. I know it's kind of misleading and not really that important, but he was a dominant pass rusher for a lot of the year. He missed the first – not didn't miss the games, but was a more of a sub-package player, which I think probably better suits him going forward, at least not, you know, an every-down guy. And they rotated him in and out a little bit, but and his run defense isn't the best. But first career interception as well. Had great you know, pass rush productivity off the edge, you know, pressures per snap taken type of thing. Probably could have led the league in sacks if not for, you know, getting defensive holdings or illegal contacts down the field called to negate those penalties. So Cam Wake is my 2016 defensive player of the year.
Yeah, he's mine as well. And like you said, he had four sacks negated by penalties. He had 11.5 on the season, so he could have had 15.5, which I believe would have put him in either first or second in the NFL this season for sacks. You know, just to come back and play like he did off of a torn Achilles, you know, doesn't even look like he's going to be 35 years old at the end of the month. Just phenomenal athlete, and he had a really good season. I don't really think you can pick anyone else. So Cam Wake gets our unanimous defensive player of the year. We're going to Travis's side of the ball and the offensive player of the year. I'll take this one first. I'm going to go with the J train, Jay Ajayi. Kind of rose from the ashes and had, what, almost 1,200 yards rushing at the end of the season. Led the NFL in rushing from week six on. Led the NFL in yards after contact for the entire season. This from a guy who was, you know, basically stuck in the shuffle after being left home in that Seattle game. I thought he had a great year. So he gets my Offensive Player of the Year award.
That's a really good pick. It's probably pretty hard to go away from that, but I'm going to do it anyways because, you know, it seems like when they hand out MVPs and an Offensive Player, they always give it to two different guys. So I'm going to have to go different on the Offensive Player of the Year. I'm going to give it to Jarvis Landry because he had another season in which his raw stats, like yardage, I guess his touchdowns weren't really up, but yardage and catches were pretty much all the way there. But without the volume of pumping him balls, you know, right at the line of scrimmage, almost every other play, it seems like he was a downfield threat more so this year, at least breaking more tackles and getting upfield for bigger plays and bigger gains. He had a higher yards per target average than Antonio Brown did this year. He was 8.7, which ranks him in the top 10. So very, very impressive year from Juice this year. I think he's the spark plug for this offense and the energy source for the entire team. So I'm going to give it to Jarvis Landry for Offensive Player of the Year, and I will let you start off for the MVP.
Okay. Well, I actually did a co-MVP for this one. So my original pick was Ndamukong Suh. He made the second team All-Pro. He and Jay Ajayi both were on the second team All-Pro team. But Ndamukong Suh, I think, is a lot of the reason why Cameron Wake had 11.5 sacks.
Yeah.
I mean, basically gets double-teamed every play, and he still had five sacks of his own, maybe even six with the one in the playoffs, I think, against Roethlisberger on Sunday. Just an absolute force, and, you know, he's worth every penny of that $114 million contract, and we've still got him locked up for another 4 years, and I think he's a huge building block for that defensive side. You know, I think with him, Wake, and healthy Rashad Jones, those are kind of your three pieces, and it's probably more favored towards Sue and Jones at this point. So he got my original MVP vote, and then I thought about it more on my drive home from work, and I'm going to give the co-MVP award to Ryan Tannehill. I think we saw how much the players cared when he got knocked out of the Arizona game. I think we've really seen how far this offense, you know, grew under him this year. And I think, you know, we kind of saw the limitations that Matt Moore had. While Moore played pretty well in just about every one of those games he started, I think we all kind of realized that Ryan Tannehill's, you know, considerably better. You know, he's a team leader, team captain, and I think moving forward he's going to be, you know, a huge piece for the Miami Dolphins for years to come. So he kind of gets my sentimental team MVP co-award this year.
Man, that warms my heart to hear you say that. I love that kid so much. I call him a kid. He's the same age as me, but I love watching Ryan Tannehill play and what he means to this team. And just, I, you know, we talked about him back in week 5 after the Tennessee loss, and we just were embarrassed. We were 1-4, and he was getting brutalized back there and, you know, booed off the field. And we talked kind of about how we need to start looking at quarterbacks because, you know, whether or not Ryan Tannehill's just, you know, punch drunk or whether or not he just doesn't have it, it just seems like his time in Miami had ran out because it just didn't work there. And that happens sometimes, you know. Sometimes players need a change of scenery for things to go better for them. But I think he really responded after that once the line got healthy and played really well. And that's a great pick, Kev. I really like that one. So I'm looking forward to
how long did it take us to quit doing our keep undecided or go with him, like 4 or 5 games, and then we were just like, yep, he's the guy.
Yeah. I think that, you know, the whole Bruce Arians 8 weeks to get it acclimated to a new offense really took hold for him there. It's his job now. It's his team. I want to win. You know, I want to win a Super Bowl with whoever it is, but I really want to see him hoisting it because I think that would be just going through the growing pains with him and kind of growing from rookie year with 12 touchdown passes and 13 picks to becoming a, you know, I think it was 24-17 one year. And he's had the 6 wins and the 7 wins and the 8 wins and just never really kind of stuck. It almost personifies the, you know, being a late 20s, early 30s Miami Dolphins fan like you and I are, and kind of how we've been through all this suffering. And if he were to kind of rise above the ashes and bring us to the Lombardi, then that would be just the ultimate fairy tale storybook ending for us.
Pretty sweet vindication.
Exactly. I think it's possible. And, you know, a lot of people talk about Super Bowl windows. We'll get to my MVP here in a second, but I just want to go on this point a little longer, Kev. We talk about, you know, Super Bowl windows and how teams have these windows where they can win championships. And you and I talked about earlier about how this roster is just chocked full of young guys. You know, Adam Gase isn't even 40 years old yet. Couldn't even be the president of the United States yet. So it's just pretty crazy how I think this window is going to open up big time here. Whether it's this year, we'll see how the draft and free agency goes. But I just have so much faith they're gonna have another good draft class because they have the last two. And, you know, they've had free agents that have contributed, which has always been a very tough thing for Miami. And, Kevin, you had mentioned something. Let's get to that later, actually. We'll get to that in a minute. I'll go ahead and do my award here real quick, and then we'll talk about that point that you had told me about free agents that are, you know, free agents to be for the Dolphins, if you remember that point. So we'll get to that in a second. But my offensive MVP my team MVP, I should say, is Jay Ajayi. I mean, I think it kind of has to be. Just by the way that he galvanized the offense and the team from those two 200-yard games. He put us on the map a little bit. You know, you get mad about the talking heads and the crap they say, but at least when he was in there, they were like, well, Miami can run the football. They're a running team and all this stuff and yada, yada, you know, all that good stuff. So I was really excited to see him kind of take hold of the offense. And I had been bitching about it with you before he really broke out about how I wanted a power offense. You know, watching the Broncos and the Vikings dominate earlier in the year with a good defense, and then they just kind of, well, I guess didn't run the ball very effectively, but the Cowboys did. I like those big power offenses that can run the ball and then use play action. That's kind of what we became. So very excited about Jay Ajayi. He's a young guy. I don't see anything with the knees that's going to bother him, at least anytime soon. You know, knock on wood, obviously. The shoulder injury became a bit of a concern late in the year, but he'll be fine going into next year. So I think this running game with him and Kenyon Drake can really, really explode next year. And, you know, I think the only 1-2 punch that I would take over Ajayi and Drake, actually, there's probably two of them because Le'Veon Bell is just ridiculous. He was a freak, tore us apart. Him and D'Angelo Williams are pretty damn good. And then Deontay Freeman and Tevin Coleman down in Atlanta are pretty good, too. So take nothing away from David Johnson or Zeke Elliott, but just the 1-2 punch, I think Ajayi and Drake could be phenomenal. So Jay Ajayi, my team MVP, Kev.
Yeah, I gotcha. So, well, I think that's all of our awards for tonight. So, we wanted to talk a little bit about what we thought about going into this off season without kind of getting into our free agency and draft. So, you know, Travis, I'll let you kick it off. It sounded like you had a point to bring up there.
Yeah, I got on a tangent there, man. I wanted to do that. So Kevin had mentioned to me, we talked a little bit before the show off the air about how, you know, Miami's had a hard time attracting free agents in the past. And that definitely, you know, has some credibility to it. I mean, we talked about Ryan Clark. I want to say it was like 2011 or 2010 maybe, where he was a free agent from Pittsburgh, and he was talking about coming to Miami for a visit. And then he came to Miami, and we were all excited to, you know, have a good safety on the team. And then he pretty much went right back to Pittsburgh with our offer and said, okay, here's what it is. And they gave him that, you know, whatever the kind of money he wanted. So he basically used Miami as a leverage ploy. And that kind of was, you know, the thing with the Miami Dolphins for years, you know, being the bridesmaid always, you know, obviously with a Jim Harbaugh situation. And I guess to a lesser extent, Jeff Fisher, even though we kind of dodged a bullet there. But yeah, Peyton Manning, definitely. I remember that was supposed to be a big one too, but never really materialized. But, you know, Kevin had mentioned to me how he saw on Twitter and some articles through some of the beat writers that a lot of these guys are talking about how, or all of these guys, I guess, Kevin, are talking about how they want to be back. And I saw Kenny Stills mention that. I don't know if Andre Branch did, but you had mentioned you saw a bunch of guys saying they wanted to come back next year.
Yeah, the guys that I saw, at least just from glancing at stuff today, you know, Kenny Stills mentioned it. Jermon Bushrod, who, you know, he was contemplating retirement a year ago, he mentioned he'd like to come back if possible. Who else was it? Jelani Jenkins said something about it on Instagram. I don't know if he'll be back, but he just wants to come back. You know, Andre Branch has said, you know, that he wants to be here. I don't know about that $10 million figure that Armando Salguero is talking about, but, you know, it's nice to have guys wanting to come back. You know, last year, we basically hemorrhaged, you know, the entire 2012 draft class away other than Tannehill.
Yeah.
But, you know, really the only one who ever even said anything about wanting to stay was Lamar Miller, and I think that was mostly because he's from Miami. You know, Olivier Vernon, you could kind of tell, was all about the money. Shelby never said anything. Rishard Matthews never really said anything. You know, it's nice to have these guys want to come and be a part of this culture and stay here and build something. And, you know, if you watched any of the post-game interviews, you know, Jay Ajayi was almost in tears talking about how sad he was that Sunday was the last time this team would be together. But something tells me that, you know, after this offseason, there's going to be a large, you know, chunk, that nucleus of guys that are going to be around here for a long time, just because they all want to play for Adam Gase and want to be part of this. So it's really a nice change, and we haven't really had that, you know, since like really the Jimmy Johnson days that I can remember.
Yeah, it seemed like Miami was kind of a destination back in those days, you know, like David Boston and Junior Seau and those kind of guys. I know that's a little bit later, but it seemed like we always kind of had the big fish, at least in our radar there, but recently not been that way. But yeah, you mentioned the Jay Ajayi in tears, and I can definitely see where he's coming from, because this was such a fun ride for, you know, if it was this fun for us as fans, how fun do you think it was for those guys to, you know, fly back from Los Angeles after getting the Chargers win and the LA win, just you know, partying on the flight for 6 hours straight, and just all the stuff that goes into working every day together. And that's a young group too, so they're hungry and they want these new contracts, and they're going to be getting them. And I think that we'll do a lot better, hopefully, you know, pre-planning for these contracts that are coming up with, you know, like we mentioned, Jarvis Landry's due next year. Just do the deal this offseason, man. Make him a Dolphin for life. I don't see why you wouldn't. I mean, the guy embodies everything that we want to be as a team, and him and Adam Gase are just on, you know, such a vibing level that I don't want to, you know, mess that up at all. Just give him this money and give him his contract, and let's call it a day. So that's kind of how I see, you know, things being played out. I think that we're going to spend a lot more time trying to lock up our own guys. But Kevin, that kind of leads me into our future plans. I don't want to get too far into that, because Kevin and I have some episode ideas coming up here, and we'll get into the content of those in a little bit. But first, just some shout outs here. I'm planning on doing an article. I'm not sure when it's going to happen. It'll be either this week or next. I promise it's going to be an exit interview article. I'm going to review every player on the roster and talk about, you know, kind of what their future is with this team. And then, you know, if you're not for the blog portion or the reading portion, you can hear me and Kevin definitely going to talk about that a lot on some future episodes too. But so keep an eye out for that. Keep an eye out for Kevin's article on the defensive coordinator search that's going to be coming up here pretty soon, whether it's Matt Burke or someone else that gets hired for the Dolphins.
Or if it stays, who knows?
That could be the case too. We'll see. I kind of took to Vance on Twitter during the game because I was a little bit upset, but I probably overreacted on that. I think that you probably would keep me in check on that. Pretty much told him he can go ahead and pack his bags to Denver after that performance, but probably a little bit reactionary there, but fair enough for a Dolphins fan, I suppose, trying to see his team win a playoff game for the first time since he was in the sixth grade. So I get a bit of a pass for that, I think. Going back over the catalog again, guys, we love that you guys reach out to us on Twitter. We read some reviews last time. We love those. Keep them coming. Please give us a 5-star rating, a nice little review, and subscribe to the podcast. And, we love hearing that. We love reading it. It kind of makes my day when I, check that stuff at work and whatnot. So keep doing that. Please listen to the Perfectville podcast with Sam and Chris. Those guys are on fire doing 2 episodes a week. I'm not sure what their offseason plan is, but that does remind me that we do have Kevin mentioned it earlier about the awards we gave out earlier in the episode, but we are doing a big mega 4-person show where Kevin and I will join Chris and Sam, so you can hear all 4 of us on the same podcast at once, giving out the Finzies Awards. Not sure when Sam's doing that. He's got that. That's his brainchild, so he's working that up for everybody here. I know that one of the awards he mentioned was the Dolly Parton Award for Biggest Bust, and it was Mario Williams. Who else was on there? I think Deontay Carew was my suggestion. He put him on there as well. I can't remember the others. But anyway, that's kind of what we're going to be doing with that. I think there's 12 of them. So keep an eye out for that episode, that mega episode. Kevin, you got any more alerts? Any more articles you're working on besides the defensive coordinator one?
I think once we figure out if Vance Joseph leaves or if he's staying or who Miami gets, I'll probably do a follow-up on some of the defensive players or types of defensive players we can expect the team to look at. So I'll probably have that out towards the end of January would be my guess.
Perfect. So Kevin will be definitely taking care of you guys on the defensive side of the ball and probably the more active side of the ball for the draft coming up. But Kevin and I had talked a little bit about this morning, or we talked a little bit this morning about what we were going to do for some future episodes. And we were talking about the ladies for Bill Burr. The ladies, if you listen to his podcast, will be out of town. So rather than, being bad guys and going out and trying to find strange tale, we're just going to sit at home and talk about football like the nerds we are. So I had mentioned to him how I'm watching a show again for probably the 3rd time through, and we were talking about doing something similar to that effect of what they did on the show. And if you're a fan of the show, you recognize this. So that is obviously the Breaking Bad theme, and I've been plugged back into that show again for the 3rd straight time, like I mentioned. So I talked to Kevin about, doing the show doing a few shows in one day and just kind of having a mega cookout session where I'm Jesse Pinkman and he's Walter White, a.k.a. Heisenberg, talking about Dolphins football rather than making meth.
For the record, we are not making meth.
I certainly don't understand the chemistry, and I certainly don't understand the streets, even though I said so on Twitter. So
yeah,
Definitely not our forte there. But, we talked about doing it sometime this week. I think we're going to have a few episodes. We're just going to pound a few of them out and then release them, not back-to-back, because I want to kind of give you guys some space and time to listen to them. But we're going to have some stuff out for you guys in the next couple of weeks because, I was thinking I needed a Dolphins vacation, Kevin, but I am kind of tuned back in already just 2 days after the loss.
Yeah, it's it's a good time to be a Dolphins fan. I think that's probably the best way to sum up this season. And I don't know if you could have really said that the last few years.
No, yeah, you definitely couldn't have. And, Joe Philbin being kept around for 2 years too long was a big, kick in the gut and all that stuff too. So we will get to the free agency plan. I think I'm going to kind of go over positions and the options there, Kevin. If you want to do the same with me as well, we'll discuss offense and defense, obviously, and talk about some of the options, whether it's free agency or the draft. And then we're going to really start getting into the draft, some Senior Bowl stuff probably for you guys, just everything. I mean, Kevin, I don't know about you, but I'm planning on being pretty finger on the pulse of this team all off season.
Yeah, I mean, the last few years, I really haven't even watched the Senior Bowl just because I've been kind of tuned out after the season. This year, I'm fired up for it. I really want to watch it and see if we can pinpoint some guys that may end up Dolphins.
Yeah, you see that I think it was Jerod Davis is going to be in the Senior Bowl this year. One of the guys that Chris from the Finns and Twitter, Chris Kaufman, had mentioned is a possible target for us. So, yeah, just definitely a lot of guys to look at there in that game. Obviously, the scouting combine in Indianapolis. So, plenty to come, guys. Thanks for listening to this one, as always. Kevin, you got anything else you want to add?
Yeah, I was a little bummed my boy Taco Charlton didn't accept his invitation. So, you know, maybe he'll slide down the draft board a little bit because of it. That's all I've got for tonight. So, you know, we'll have some good stuff going.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Fin's up. And like I said, check out the Welcome to Perfectville podcast with Chris and Sam, Wright, Travis Wright, Ronan's Rumblings, and always, as always, the Finalysis podcast. So you guys have a good night, and we will talk to you soon about some free agency and the draft.
Thanks for listening to the Finalysis with Travis Wingfield and Kevin Dern. Subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes, and go to welcometoperfectville.com for the very best coverage of your Miami Dolphins. Fin's up.